Exodus chapter 12, verses 12 to 17, page 68. 12 to 17. Okay. On that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn, both men and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. This is a day you are to commemorate. For the generations to come, you shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. For 7 days you are to eat bread made without yeast. On the first day, remove the yeast from your houses, for whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day until the seventh must be cut off from Israel. On the first day, hold a sacred assembly, and another one on the seventh day. Do no work at all on these days, exactly to prepare food for everyone to eat. That is all you may do. Celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread, because it was on this very day that I brought you divisions out of, that I brought your divisions out of Egypt. Celebrate this day as a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. And then, page 958, Zechariah, chapter 14, verses 16 to 21. That's page 958. Okay. Yeah, 958. Sorry, 959. Then the survivors from all the nations that have attacked Jerusalem will go up year after year to worship the King, the Lord Almighty, and to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. If any of the peoples of the earth do not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord Almighty, they will have no rain. If the Egyptian people do not go up and take part, they will have no rain. The Lord will bring on them the plague he inflicts on the nations that do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. This will be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. On that day, holy to the Lord will be inscribed on the bells of the horses, and the cooking pots in the Lord's house will be like the sacred bowls in front of the altar. Every pot in Jerusalem and Judah will be holy to the Lord Almighty, and all who come to sacrifice will take some of the pots and cook in them. And on that day, there will no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord Almighty.
Amen. For that. Celebrate, or celebrate God, that's our strapline. And I like to look up words at times, so I did a Bible search on the word celebrate, as it's our strapline, as it's in our verse as well. Celebrate God all day, every day, revel in Him. I was thinking, how many times is the word used? Now, the verse actually comes from the Message version of the Bible. I have no problem with the Message version. And it actually occurs in there some 72 times in the whole of the Message Bible. But as it's fairly modern, you think that's fine. It still uses the best translations, but it is a paraphrase. So I looked up in the NIV. I was expecting about 3 or 4. Anybody like to hazard a guess? No? Well, I'll tell you a bit later. Reason why we didn't go for the NIV, which is rejoice in the Lord always, again I will say rejoice, is the difference to me between rejoice and celebrate, which we'll come on to in a bit. We put together the strap line. The message, in a way, version seemed more vibrant. So we went for celebrate God rather than rejoicing in the Lord. We did change the word slightly because, as you saw this morning when Amuta, if you were here this morning, put up on the screen, she said, celebrate God all day, every day. I mean, revel in Him. But actually, if you look through the New Testament and you look at all the times that Matthew quotes from the Old Testament and Paul quotes from the Old Testament, they don't always do it word for word. They will leave some words out, they will put some words in, they will change it slightly. Never the sense of it, but sometimes the wording of it. So I have no problems, the fact that we chopped out the I mean and just have that together. What I do object to is sermons I've heard where the preacher will just throw verse after verse after verse at you and give you no time to look them up. That's why often when we have a reading, it's actually longer than the verses looked at because you're trying to put them in context. What does it say in context? Rather than rip it out and make it say something totally different. So back to the word celebrate. In the message, it was 72 times. NIV?
Rejoice.
No, celebrate. Same word. I was thinking quite low. 50 times. So the next question I asked myself was, how many times does it occur in the Old Testament, and how many times does the word occur in the New Testament? Well, stick with the message, 72. It occurs in the Old Testament 59 times. So those of you who have already done the arithmetic, it's 13 in the New. For the NIV, that splits 44 in the Old and 6 in the New. You could say, well, there's more books in the Old Testament. It's bound to occur more. But in actual fact, if you were to do it strictly as the number of books in the message, it should be 43 and 29 rather than 59 and 13. And in the NIV, it should be a 30 to 29 split. I've rounded up the numbers instead of 44 and 6. I did look up the King James Version. They only celebrated 3 times. But maybe they were more dour, those in the 17th century. And they all occur in the Old Testament. But that did get me thinking, very often, Christians are seen to be the killjoys of things. You know, you can't do this, you can't do that. Never with a happy face. I did hear once that somebody stood up and gave a testimony, and it went, I'm so happy I'm a Christian, and I've been saved from my sins, and God no longer will throw me into hell. And I was thinking, dear, oh dear, oh dear. He didn't sound happy at all. But I remember when I was a lot younger, or a bit younger, I should say, that I was told by an older Christian, they said, Christians, we're always joyful on the inside, but we don't show it on the outside. At the time, clapping in church was just coming in, and they didn't like clapping. And as for dancing, well, that was over my dead body. So, you know, we even had one man, I remember, who said, if I see an electric guitar in my church, I shall walk out of the service. He liked electric and he liked acoustic guitars, but not putting the two together. I couldn't work it out either. But there we are. But then why is it that the Old Testament has all these celebrations as opposed to the New Testament. At first reading, it could be due to all the festivals. We read there from Exodus, the first one, the Passover. That was the first important thing to celebrate. Time to remember. To remember when the children of Israel were released from the hands of the Egyptian slave masters. That night when the firstborn of those who smeared the blood on their doorframes and the angel passed over and didn't, their firstborns weren't killed or died. Every year they were to come and celebrate that feast, that incident in their history, to remind themselves what God has done for them. There are lots of feasts. If you go through the book of Leviticus, there are feasts all over the place that they are called to celebrate at certain times of the year, and even all the way through the Old Testament. Zechariah, prophet near the end of the book, near the end of the Old Testament, some people were even told, if you don't celebrate, then you're not part of us. So they were to celebrate. That was the Feast of Tabernacles, slightly different to the Passover. But of course, today we celebrate not the Passover, but we celebrate communion. Service laid down by Jesus in the upper room. Remember the service of bread and wine which Jesus formed as he and his disciples were taking that last supper that he ever had on this earth prior to the capture, the trial and the death of himself. And he says, as Jesus took bread, he gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This is the cup of the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." It was meant to carry on. We celebrate communion. It has a special meaning, although at times I think today in the modern age, it's almost lost that specialness. We tack it on at the end of a service or something, you know, in places, and it's just a tacked on extra, rather than something special. In the past, members would have had communion cards that they dropped into the communion offering to show they'd been there. And that was how special it was thought to be. We can have lots of celebrations. But that's taking the word celebrate in the sense of observing a special day, like Remembrance Day, when, of course, traffic is stopped or is trying to come back and we always have a two-minute silence at 11 o'clock. We celebrate Remembrance Day, but that means we observe it. Or an event like a wedding or a birthday. We've just all celebrated Christmas in one way or another. But to me, that's not the meaning of the verse of the year. Celebrate God all day, every day. Revel in him. Or our strapline, celebrate God. When, as a leadership, we all met, we meant it, I'm sure, that God was telling you it's not just observing or commemorating. The sense was to think of celebration, of joy, of happiness, of exuberance, that the word celebrate also brings. If you look up celebrate on Google, it's all balloons and sparklers and everything going off, rather than just foam. But sometimes Christians, we've been quite bad at that. One of the heroes of past times, preacher, was Martin Lloyd-Jones. And I had one sermon from him where he preached on you remember the old C90s that were an hour and a half long? These two sides, 45 minutes each side. Well, he preached on But God, and he ran out, the tape runs out before the sermon does. But that was Martin Lloyd-Jones. But he said one of the things that always stuck with me, he said, imagine you've got two crowds of people. One is a football crowd, and the other is a church congregation. How do you know a football crowd when they're going towards a football team, a football match? They're usually singing, they're usually noisy, they're usually talking to each other animatedly and excitedly. They're usually talking about the match, what's going to happen. And when they get to the ground, of course, they talk about, you know, when the last times they met, and they look at the prayer and talk to each other. How do you tell people coming to church? Well, it used to be the big back Bible under the armpit. But you don't see the animation, the excitement, the talking together. They just are walking into church. In church, we can talk about anything and everything other than why we're there, to worship God. But then what happens after the church or after the football match? You can always tell the winners and the losers. The winners are excited, they're singing, they're making a lot of noise. In a lot of churches, when the congregation goes out, you don't know whether they've had a good service or a bad service, because it's all sort of bland. Now, I'm not saying we should go out and go, ooh, but at least, thankfully now, we have got churches like that, that actually exhibit a bit of emotion, because that was the problem. We were told we couldn't be happy. We always had to be serious. But we come together to worship, to relate to the greatest in the universe, to relate to God. Sadly, it's when Christians do go home on a Sunday looking sad. Because what does that say to everybody who sees them? Church makes them look sad, not happy, not celebrate. Hopefully this year, as we celebrate God, not just observe or commemorate, but to praise, to find out those things we can have happiness in, that we can be joyful about God. Doesn't mean to say we'll avoid the hard things of life. That would be unreal. But we need to celebrate, to try and get that sense of excitement, happiness, be joyful. Remember one time Sue and I, when we were first married, we ran a midweek children's club. And as we started it off and the age group was there, and as it gradually went up, we brought in others to look after the ones that we'd had, and we then looked after the slightly older ones. Or was it the other way? It might be the other way around, but don't really matter. And I was overseeing all the children's work in the church at the time. And I went in to have a look. Well, I noticed the structure of the evening was they had half an hour playing games. They had another third of it playing, doing craft, and then they had a third with a story. Sometimes the craft and the story were in two groups. But what I saw was leaders who, when they played the games, you know, they're playing football and they were doing other games, got excited and were really into it. Some of them unfortunately forgot they were playing with seven-year-olds and they shouldn't really go at full blast. But, you know, they were excited. And then when it got to the craft, they did the craft and there was a buzz, there was a sign, they were interacting with the kids. When it came to the Bible story, it all went flat. And they told this story, and I was bored. Probably because I knew what the story was, but, you know, I was getting bored. What were the children doing? I remember a classic one was, one was telling a story in his usual way, which wasn't very good. And the doors of the hatch opened from the kitchen, and out came the drinks and some biscuits. And the kids all sort of went, shh, straight over to these. I must admit, I was newly in teaching, and I went into the teacher mode and tore the kids off a little bit of a strip, but then had a chat with the leaders as well that they should make the Bible bit. They should work harder at that to make it exciting and the games and the craft, because that's what we're here for, to make the Bible exciting so they want to get to know God. And I want us, including me, to be excited when I think about God. Fortunately, we have gone past the era when God was seen as the big sort of disciplinarian in the sky. And we can love him, although somebody said we've swapped the almightiness of God to the almightiness of God. We have to be careful we don't go over that line, but we can know God and get excited about God. And we do that by actually doing the last part of the verse. We start off, celebrate God all day, every day, which is quite good, but it's a bit like pray all the time. But I have to keep my eyes open to drive. You know, I've still got to work that one out. But revel in him. To revel is to take great pleasure or delight in something or someone. This year we intend to revel in God, to delight in him by looking at him. You know, we've looked at discipleship, but that's looking at us as human beings. This year we want to look at God, who he is, not so much what he's done for us, but because all too often that turns again into self-centered, human-centered. This year we want to be God-centered, looking to him. But that will have an effect on us as we look at the wonderful God that we follow. We cannot look closely at God, revel in him, without being affected by it, being affected by him, or at least that should be. Just finish. So we're not home early, we've got a bit afterwards coming. So I want to think about somebody, or read the passage of somebody who did celebrate God and did revel in God to the dismay of some others. Now King David was told, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has because of the Ark of God." Remember the story? The Ark was, in one place it had been brought to the house of Obed-Edom because somebody had touched it and died. But then when the Ark was there, his household was blessed. So David thought, "Oh, well, I'll just move it a bit further to Jerusalem and amalgamate both the religious and the political centres, but also I might get the blessing as well." So it says, "David went down and brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the Ark of the Lord had taken 6 steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. David, wearing a linen ephod, danced before the Lord with all his might, while he and the entire house of Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouts and with trumpets, the sound of trumpets. As the Ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, wife of David, watched from a window. And when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart." David was getting excited. Now, I'm not saying that next time Amuta and I lead a service, we'll be wearing a linen ephod. We'll stick to normal clothes, I think. But, you know, why not have a bit of dance? Oh, we can't do that in church. Interestingly, I knew people who would go dancing on a Saturday but wouldn't dance in church on a Sunday. And I'm thinking, they're all the same. But Michal didn't like it. She thought David, it was beneath him. You know, he should be regal as a king and not indulge in that sort of thing. But we all can. It's getting excited about God. And sometimes that comes out as bodily movements, not just to be sort of stomped down inside of us. yeah, I'm happy inside, but I'm looking serious outwards. So this year, as we do celebrate God, as we do celebrate God all day, every day, we need to revel in Him.